Christian Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents You Can Talk to God Like That, The Surprising Power of Lament to Save Your Faith, by Abby Norman, narrated by Sarah Zimmerman. Introduction. Honey, are you mad at God? In that small sentence in our living room, her in the chair, me on the couch, my mom asked me about the one thing I hoped no one would ever notice. I was maybe 17 and had been sick on and off for 4 years with what would eventually be diagnosed as fibromyalgia. I was also deeply earnest about my faith, the kind of innocent earnestness teenagers fall so easily into. I was a leader in my youth group and wore Christian t-shirts to school in the hopes of witnessing to my friends. I organized the prayer for See You at the Poll Day. I was a good Christian girl. I didn't want anyone to know I was mad at God, but I was. I was really mad at God. I wanted to be good and faithful and sure of God. But I had been sick for so long, and it was only getting worse. And no one could figure out what was wrong with me. And 1998 was not a great time to be struggling with an autoimmune disorder. These days, everyone knows someone with fibromyalgia, chronic fatigue, or some other immunodeficiency. But when I was young, most people figured I was making it all up. With even God ignoring my cries for healing, it felt like God didn't see my pain either. Over the same 4 years that I struggled with my health, our church had a bit of a revival. The Holy Spirit showed up in miraculous ways. About once a month, I went to a prayer service and watched people be healed. On Sundays, we heard tales of a faithful God healing babies' asthma and shrinking tumors. Every single month, I walked to the front of the church and allowed people to lay hands on me with a sincere belief that this time God would heal me. Every month, I believed I was healed and lived into that healing by insisting I was okay before collapsing into a pile of exhaustion when it became clear I was not. At the end of one of those heart-wrenching cycles, I dragged myself from my bedroom to the living room and fell into an aching heap on the couch. It was then that my mother asked me if I was mad at God. When I think about that teenager now, in her gray marching band hoodie, crying in her living room, I am so grateful for what happened next. My mother saw me. I looked up at my mom, horrified that she knew my secret. I was very, very mad at God. I could not understand why God was letting me remain sick when I knew God had the power to heal. I had, for my whole life, been faithful to God, and now God was not returning the favor. How could God have forgotten about me? Why would God not heal me? Didn't God know I was in pain? Couldn't God see that I was suffering? I was so confused and angry with God, and I was terrified that being angry at God meant that I was bad. Good Christian girls praised God. They loved Jesus and talked about their faith and trust in Him. I was sure being angry at God was the opposite of that, something that failed Christians did. I was sure being angry with God was not a choice. My mom scooped me into her lap. Well, sort of. I was at this point bigger than she was. She held me and rocked me and said what I think are the two most important sentences I've ever heard. Me too. I am mad at God too. I completely dissolved into a puddle of tears. I was not going to be judged for my anger and sorrow. I was not alone in resenting an all-powerful God who refused to heal me. I was not the only one who felt like God had somehow forgotten me. I was allowed to be mad at God. I am so glad my mom was willing to teach me that. That lesson has saved my faith over and over again. I was reminded of that moment almost 20 years later in my first year of seminary studying the Old Testament with Dr. Joel Lamon. Dr. Lamon, with his signature bow ties, was one of those professors who knew how to not only give his students the material they needed, but also pass on his love of the things he taught. And this man loved the Old Testament, especially the Psalms. In the midst of teaching them, which took him 3 class periods longer than it was supposed to because Lamon thought everything was important, Dr. Lamon said something that affirmed that moment in my mother's arms. As long as you are talking to God and not about God, you are in a faithful relationship with God and are participating in a faithful act of worship. The act of yelling at God, telling God why you are angry, of demanding that things change and change right now, the act of crying out to God, "Why would you do this to me?" is an act of worship. As it turns out, being angry with God is a choice, and in fact, being angry with God is far from the act of a failed person of faith. It is a vital, necessary part of a healthy and faithful relationship with God. It's an act of worship, and that act of worship is called lament. Lament takes up a surprising amount of space in the Old Testament. People giving God the what for, while not taught in Sunday school, is actually almost a third of the Bible. Lamentations itself is an entire book of the Old Testament. When categorizing the Psalms, experts say that 40% of them are Psalms of lament. Chapter 3 of Ecclesiastes reminds us that for everything there is a season. A time to be sad and a time to mourn are sanctified. Yet the church, it seems, makes room only for praise. God is good all the time. All the time, God is good. While that might be true, sometimes it doesn't feel true. Sometimes it feels like God is playing some kind of sick joke on us, and we are supposed to just smile our way through it. Seriously, God? But we aren't. God invites us to cry out to God, to be comforted by God and by one another, and to ultimately call out for change. But before any of that can happen, first we need to admit something is wrong. We need to admit that we are not okay with our lives and our surroundings. We need to lament. We must lament to God. We must lament with one another. And we must lament as a prophetic act to the world. Somewhere in our spiritual formation, lament has been lost, has been labeled unfaithful, or just some spoiled child's whining. It is not. Lament is our way to reconcile an unjust world with a God who loves us beyond all measure. Lament changes us, and it changes the world, if only we trust God enough to cry out. Part 1. Lament to God. 1. Do good Christians have bad feelings? An invitation to biblical lament. The first time I attempted to explore lament seriously as an act and a practice, it was on a whim. In my first year of seminary, I was required to participate in contextual education. In other words, I had to learn how to be a theologian in the world where things are messy and hard, not just to think about God in terms of the neatly defined boxes of attributes we make up in academia. My contextual education site was the largest youth prison in the state of Georgia. Once a week, 3 other seminarians and I presented our IDs and left our keys and cell phones at the front desk. We were then buzzed through a series of doors until we were locked inside the library, where we waited for the children to be escorted to us by guards. Inside that severely under-resourced library, we got to know the children who had been locked up by the state. As we learned their stories, one tiny piece at a time, we learned 2 things. First, that they always needed help. And second, that what they were given wasn't help, but punishment. Every single child in that place, if you could get past the facade of toughness they were using as protection, was a kid who made poor decisions, like all kids do, and who had been failed by the adults that were supposed to protect them. There was a lot of blame flying around that place, and almost all of the blame landed on the kids. The easiest way for them to process all this trauma was to blame themselves. The kids were often looking for someone or something to blame. Haven't we all been looking for that? It had to be somebody's fault that they were in jail, and they determined that it was their fault and that they deserved what was happening to them. If they could just learn the right lesson, they would be able to earn their way out of that terrible place and move on with their lives. If they could blame themselves, they could be in charge again. This blame game was compounded by the predominant theology of the youth prison. Most of the kids were at least marginally Christian, and many of the volunteers who came in on the weekends told the kids about a God who did everything for a reason. The kids were told only of a totally benevolent God, that they were locked away from their family and friends because that somehow this was the intention of that good, loving God. While I was learning to love a theology that considered contexts, systems, and power structures in the classroom, I also learned how much bad theology can hurt those in the prison system. Ideas about God and how God works in the world are amazing, but they have serious consequences we need to be aware of. The kids knew it was absolutely not God's fault they were in prison, and that left the idea that somehow they were in prison because God wanted them there and they deserved it. How do you talk to a God that wants you to be locked up and traumatized? How do you build a relationship with a God who is benevolent but who also put you in jail? What does it mean to a 15-year-old girl who is being abused by our criminal justice system that God is all-powerful when the judge who seems pretty dang powerful in her life won't even hear her case? These were the questions these children forced us to confront. I still don't have a good answer for them, but I did want to introduce them to a new way of interacting with God. In our Old Testament class with our bow-tied professor, we learned about lament. Our group decided to try introducing this kind of prayer to the kids in the prison. We sat at the table in the poorly stocked library, and we all checked in, explaining how we were feeling and why we were experiencing those emotions. Then we told them what we would be doing for the day. We would be writing our own laments. We would be telling God how we really felt, why we were angry, how we were disappointed and scared. Mostly, the kids had a lot of questions. What do you mean, yell at God? What do you mean, tell God to change what is happening to me? They were a little afraid we were leading them into heresy. They had never heard anything like this before. Were they allowed to talk to God like that? Was anyone? I saw the question on their faces, and I totally got it. Lamenting to God was a new concept to me as well, one I wasn't totally comfortable with either. But I also knew that in the hardest parts of my teenage years, lament was what had allowed me to keep believing in God. We went to the Bible. We checked psalm after psalm after psalm, and the kids were a little scandalized. You were allowed to talk to God like that. It was all over the Bible. Jesus did it too. Then we took out the paper and pencils that had been counted in through the metal detectors, and we wrote our own laments. For the first time, the girls were asking the questions they had been hiding for months. They had permission to feel the things they had been trying not to feel. They began writing down everything they had been afraid to ask. Who was going to come save them? If God was so just and benevolent, why were horrible things happening? Why did the abuses keep coming? We left the jail with no answers, but we left knowing something powerful had happened. The girls had told God the truth. They had written gorgeous and holy prose in the hardest place they'd ever found themselves, and God did not strike them down. Rather than being punished by God for lamenting, the girls felt comforted. Telling the truth to God in all its awful suffering and anger brought relief. God desires our lament. Lamenting may seem strange to those of us raised in churches that only had prayers of praise and gratitude, but the Bible calls us to lament. It is not just that we can talk to God like that, but that we should. There is a time and a place for lament. Ecclesiastes tells us this when it says there is a time for hope and despair, for work and for rest. Lament is necessary for a full relationship with God, our community, and our world. The Bible tells us that God knows us intimately, has our names written on God's palm, knows the number of hairs on our heads. We do not have to hide from the God who knows us this closely, this minutely. We can, in fact, bear our souls, our deepest hurts to God. Unfortunately, many of us were never taught how to cry out to God. We only know how to pray in the ways we have seen other people pray. When you think about prayer, what does it sound like? It might be soft and scripted. It might be loud and demanding and victorious. It might be silent. Different traditions have very different expressions of prayer, and some of those traditions are better at embracing lament than others. I have always been a little ecumenically promiscuous. There isn't a religious experience I am not at least a little bit curious about, and thus have encountered a large variety of prayer experiences. I have prayed with Catholics and learned how to do the rosary with a woman who was trained as a nun. I have watched as people have fallen out or were slain in the spirit, and I sometimes speak in tongues. I love a well-written liturgy, and I also freestyle from the heart. I have watched a woman weep at the prayer rail, and in that moment it was the holiest thing I'd ever seen in a church. I have sat in silence until the discomfort drifted away, and I have cozied up with God and taken a nap. All of this has brought me closer to God, and it is all prayer. But in all my experiences with prayer, only my mother and Dr. Lamont have told me lament is holy. We have the tendency to pray in the ways that our community prays. You won't find a charismatic church in the mountains reading out of the Book of Common Prayer. You likely won't find an Episcopal church that is expert at praise dancing. We know what we see. We learn to pray at the feet of our spiritual parents, just like we learn to talk and eat. And almost no Christian faith tradition shows us how to lament. Mostly, we praise God and we thank God. Then we bless the congregation and walk out the door. Luckily for us who grew up without the lament tradition, the Bible gives us tons of examples of it. While it typically isn't a part of our Christian tradition, lament is a huge part of the Bible. As I learned from Dr. Lamont, Lamentations is a whole book of the Bible, but most people haven't read it. Of the Psalms, more than a third are classified by biblical scholars as lament psalms. For example, Psalm 102 is labeled a prayer of an afflicted person who has grown weak and pours out a lament before the Lord. The psalm begins, "Hear my prayer, Lord. Let my cry for help come to you. Do not hide your face from me when I am in distress. Turn your ear to me. When I call, answer me quickly." Psalm 102, verses 1 through 2. This is a prayer specifically for the events when we need to cry out to God. It was written for occasions when we feel totally empty and abandoned. It is designed for the times when everything is terrible. In the Old Testament, lament is deeply holy. All the prophets had seasons of lament. In fact, for most of them, lament was their main gig. Hosea describes his marriage to a prostitute and wails at the tragedy it brings him, a metaphor for what God's people were doing to God in his time. Ezekiel literally lies on his side in the middle of the town, wailing. In the time of the prophets, lament was how God got the attention of God's people. Then and now, lament can be how God's people capture the heart of God. Jeremiah says that God hears our laments and responds. Jeremiah chapter 29, verses 12 through 13 say, "Then you will call on me and come and pray to me, and I will listen to you. You will seek me and find me when you seek me with all your heart." Lament is hard. Lament is gritty. Lament doesn't hold back. Lament is the truth about our hearts, about our communities, about the reality of our world and how it does not line up with how God intended the world to be. Lament is part of a long biblical and holy tradition of telling God that you are not okay and that you certainly are not okay with the way the world works. Moses cries out against Pharaoh. Jesus says his piece against the Pharisees, even flipping the tables and calling the religious elite a den of thieves. Job wants to know, why me? And asks God that very question pretty much to God's face. Jesus talks to God like Job talked to God, demanding that this cup of suffering be removed from his hands and begging God for a different way. Jesus tells God he doesn't want to do what God is asking. I used to think that this was because he was the Son of God and had some kind of special privilege that was not available to me. I am not sure how I came to that conclusion, but I was wrong. Jesus was raised in a Jewish home with the Hebrew Scriptures. He knows the Psalms and Lamentations. Jesus sounds like a prophet of old, not because he was born speaking like that, but because he was raised with a template of how to cry out to God. He was raised to talk to God with the full range of human emotion, in anger and desperation and grief. And Jesus did exactly that. He wept and asked God to take away his suffering in the Garden of Gethsemane. He wept with the sisters of Lazarus, joining their grief when their brother died. From the cross, Jesus quoted a lament psalm. Psalm 22, which is normally attributed to David, is quoted by Jesus in Matthew chapter 27. When you don't have anything nice to say. I do not ever remember a time when I haven't wanted to please God. I grew up in a Christian home, the kind where you find yourself at church two or three times a week because of the various committees your parents are on. We had a key to our church hanging next to the spare set for our car. It was a major part of my childhood and my adolescence. The things I learned at McCord Road Christian Church were incredibly influential and continue to be very dear to me. But there was a glaring hole in my Christian education. No one taught me how to give God my big feelings. No one told me how to handle my anger in Sunday school. We didn't talk much about sadness either, or annoyance. We didn't talk about what to do when you feel hopeless or disappointed. We talked about how there was always hope, because God would make a way, and that since God knows the desires of your heart, disappointment was only temporary. That our behavior should reflect those beliefs. Rage, blinding frustration at the injustice of it all, was not something that was ever explored, even though I felt it. Whether explicitly or not, I learned that big, ugly feelings toward God and God's plan in my life were off the table for faithful believers, especially for faithful female believers. Girls were allowed to be appropriately sad, but anger, or real deep grief, was too unbecoming. I never saw anyone's face contort in rage or turn bright red as they fought hot tears during prayer time. Well, anyone's but mine. As far as I could tell, these big feelings weren't a problem for anyone else. It seemed that other Christians didn't have the sorts of feelings I did, or at least they were better at not talking about them. I couldn't figure out if I was broken or if they were lying or if I just had bigger feelings than most people. I have never, ever been accused of hiding what I feel. From infancy to today, what I feel is what you see. If you flip through the stacks of picture albums at my mother's house, there are family pictures where I am laughing hysterically, overjoyed by the doll buggy I was gifted, or a chance to be at the beach, or just as many where I am clearly furious. More than one Easter dinner or Christmas Eve photo has my sisters on one side of my dad beaming, while I am on the other side, red-faced, teeth gritted, arms across my chest. I'm pretty sure my dad is being used as a barrier so no one participating in the photo gets hurt physically, since it is pretty clear my feelings are already hurt. I had to learn to make my overly expressive face work for me. Despite my best efforts, I was never able to hide it, so I just started telling God what I really think. If we believe in an all-powerful, all-knowing God, doesn't that God know what we're thinking? We might as well say it too, then. Shockingly, I found that God agrees. Sometimes I raise my eyebrows at God when I don't understand, asking, "Are we really doing this?" And God responds, "Oh, you think you can do better?" I felt like this when I was asked to go to seminary, a career move right when my husband was leaving grad school and my youngest was entering pre-kindergarten, because didn't God know our lives were supposed to get easier? I don't know exactly how I have come to this arrangement where I speak however I want to God, but it has been happening for a while. It works for me. The more I talk to people about this quirk, and the more I pray in public, the more I realize how scandalized people are by my propensity to tell God exactly what I actually think, as if God didn't know already. My prayer requests have raised more than one eyebrow in small groups. Apparently, not everyone cries and uses the word bullshit when discussing their life predicaments. Apparently, not everyone in the mom's group admits that there are certain ages that are just desperately hard. I have, on more than one occasion, been asked if I could answer my own prayers by simply feeling less, as though I hadn't spent most of my 20s trying to do just that with abysmal results. What else is there to say sometimes except, "Seriously, God?" Sometimes you have to tell God what you really think, and what you really think is, "If this is some kind of joke, God, you are not funny." I like to say that God and I have worked out a deal. I speak to God any kind of way, and God certainly returns the favor. I spent some time in my early 30s begging God for a sign about whether or not to switch churches. And right when I was sure God was ignoring me, what I now call my home church installed an actual literal sign that I could not miss. East Side Church, creative, historic, inclusive. It was everything I was looking for. It was all the things I had been praying for. I would not have changed anything had I designed it for myself. I remember yelling, "Oh, you think you are so funny." I'm pretty sure God responded, "Actually, I am hilarious." Do good Christians hide their feelings? Telling God what we really think is, for many of us, the exact opposite of what we have been doing in church. In church, we slap a smile on and wear the mask I've heard called church face. As in, I was crying in the parking lot, but I put my church face on and walked into the foyer and told everyone I was fine. We are taught that being happy and joyous honors God, and it does if you are actually happy and joyous. But if you aren't happy and joyous, not telling the truth doesn't do yourself or your community or God any favors. God doesn't need us to protect God's image, and God doesn't need a cheerleader. God needs people who live authentic lives, and that means experiencing the full range of human experience with God, not in spite of or away from God. That means crying when we are sad, and not putting on our church face when we are angry or disappointed. It means saying, "I am not okay, and I do not know if I'm going to be okay." Because it is true, even if you are expected to say, "Fine." As I mentioned earlier, I am cursed, or blessed, I suppose, with the inability and complete lack of desire to ever put on a church face, especially in church. With parents who served as elders and trustees, the anchor of the alto section of the choir, and the leader of the longest-running Bible study, I had little choice but to make myself at home in the church building. The first public fit I can remember throwing was in church. I think I was 6 years old. My sense of justice was offended when I was, according to my own assessments, asked one too many times to give up something I wanted. I reacted by sitting in the middle of the room and screaming until my mom picked me up by my elbows and carried me out to the minivan where I could calm down. To my mother's delight or chagrin, depending on the day, I didn't necessarily grow out of this strong sense of justice. When I was 15, my sister and I got into a yelling match in the church narthex between the two Christmas Eve services. She accused me of embarrassing her in front of a boy. I accused her of being something you aren't really supposed to shout at your sister in the narthex on the eve of baby...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?